This is the KVNF Regional News for Friday, January 24th, 2014. I'm Patricia Naft. Good morning. Lawmakers and Governor Hickenlooper are touting a package of bills they say will help prevent and fight wildfires. Most of the measures stem from an interim committee that met in the off session. Benta Berkland has more at the state capitol.
Colorado's wildfires are becoming more destructive, and Governor John Hickenlooper expects another difficult year ahead.
We have a clear idea that we're going to have challenges. And what used to be a fire season that was 3 or 4 months is now 6 or 8 or even 9 months.
The package of measures includes an informational website and death benefits for seasonal firefighters killed in the line of duty. Lawmakers also support a tax credit to help homeowners remove trees from their property and find other ways to reduce the fire danger.
They much more clearly over the last 2 years understand exactly what the risks are for having wood shake roofs or wooden decks, high grass growing close around your home. I think incentives are going to work better rather than imposing fees.
But the bills don't go nearly as far as some in the fire and nonprofit community would like. For instance, lawmakers aren't backing a minimum statewide building code in the wildland-urban interface or updating the state's emergency radio communication system. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel has been following the story of two reporters from Craig who were kept out of a meeting in Moffat County with U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, Governor John Hickenlooper, and some state and wildlife officials. The topic of the meeting was the future of sage-grouse management in western Colorado. The bird's habitat covers 75% of the lands in Moffat County. The meeting on Tuesday took place after a tour of a ranch owned by Ray Owens, who recently received a Land Owner of the Year award from Colorado Parks and Wildlife. KVNF's Travis Bubinick spoke with Daily Sentinel reporter Gary Harmon, who's been following the story.
Thanks for joining us, Gary.
Thanks, Travis. Glad to be here.
Now, first off, the media was invited along for the ranch tour that took place before this actual meeting. Is that correct?
That is correct. Our reporter up there and several other reporters accompanied Secretary Jewell and the other folks to the Board Gulch Ranch, and they were given access of about 60 minutes thereabouts.
You mentioned in your latest article for the paper that this was technically a public meeting of the Moffat County Commissioners. I understand sage-grouse management was on the agenda, but were there any specific issues around that topic that were being discussed?
As far as I know, yeah. It basically had to do with sage-grouse. What my understanding is of what happened was that Moffat County became aware that the secretary was going to come out to visit. All three Moffat County commissioners wanted to be there and wanted to participate in a meeting with the secretary. And so what they did is file a notice of a public meeting, post a notice of a public meeting, and a workshop. Nobody anticipated there was going to be any kind of action per se out of it, at least by the commissioners. So that would allow them, the three of them, to all be in the same room at the same time. So therefore, it constituted, you know, a legally noticed meeting of the Board of County Commissioners of Moffat County. At some point then, the secretary came in with her entourage and sat down to meet with what are called stakeholders, these commissioners, BLM people, U.S. Fish and Wildlife people, ranchers, environmentalists, industry organizations, the whole shooting match, as it were. Some 50 people, from what we can ascertain, showed up. And it was apparently a public meeting, except for the fact that reporters were not allowed to view the interactions between the secretary, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the BLM, and these stakeholders.
Now, an original press release from the Interior Department mentioned there would be a, quote, brief media availability at this event, but it didn't elaborate much on that. So maybe they just weren't being clear enough that the meeting part was closed to the public. But from what I understand, state officials have told you that they were also under the impression that this was public. So who actually made the call that the reporters wouldn't be allowed into this meeting?
Well, there's an interesting question. To the best of our knowledge, right now, the call was made by the Department of Interior, and specifically Secretary Jewell, who had a confrontation with the managing editor of the Craig Daily Press. She ran up to the car that Secretary Jewell was getting into and asked her why in the world her reporter, could not get into the meeting, and the secretary said, "Well, because I closed the meeting to press." You mentioned that the meeting was open to the public, but reporters are part of the public. You can't close a meeting to everybody but reporters. No state law, no federal law contemplates anything quite like that. And that's one of the things that we find newsworthy and interesting about what's going on here.
Have you heard anything about why Jewell's office was so adamant that reporters not be allowed into this meeting?
The only explanation is that depending on which source you went, they either wanted a full and frank or a frank and open discussion. You know, this is no matter what else you think of Western Colorado, frank and open is not exactly something that's not thought of as going on here. You've been to meetings. I've been to meetings in which you have environmentalists and you have industry. You have any number of interest groups, and I have yet to see any of them hold back their thoughts and feelings about various issues.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing about that statement, saying that this meeting was closed to reporters because they wanted to have a frank and open discussion, that would seem to imply that if reporters were there, there couldn't be a frank and open discussion.
Exactly. And we cover frank and open discussions all the time, sometimes more frank and open than we might imagine. I really can't even speculate as to why the secretary thought that the presence of reporters would somehow inhibit that kind of discussion. In fact, if anything, in my experience, it tends to exacerbate frank and full and open discussion.
Have you heard anything from Jewell's office beyond that comment that this was the reason why we felt like it was appropriate to close this meeting to reporters?
No. I found it remarkable, in fact, that one of the comments out of Jewell's office was that the meeting was open to the public but closed to reporters. Those two things don't reconcile very well. It's like military intelligence. It's an oxymoron. From the best that we can tell, a federal official came into a legally noticed public meeting of the Board of County Commissioners of Moffat County, and for reasons being full and frank and open discussion of sage-grouse, decided to close the meeting to reporters, although apparently to no one else.
Gary Harmon, he's a reporter with the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel. He's been following the story of two CREG reporters who were barred from a meeting with state officials on sage-grouse management here in western Colorado. Thanks again for joining us, Gary.
Travis, thanks. Anytime.
And an attorney with the Colorado Press Association confirmed that keeping those reporters out of the meeting did not violate Colorado's open meeting law. That's because federal officials aren't subject to those state-level rules. Colorado Representative Jared Polis has invited President Obama and U.S. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid on a tour of Colorado to see how the legalization of recreational marijuana is going. Polis sent a formal invitation to the president and Reid yesterday, asking them to visit a retail marijuana shop and a grow house. In the letter, Polis says he's confident the two would see that Colorado is successfully regulating, implementing the newly legalized industry while also protecting the safety of children. Colorado made history when it opened up retail marijuana stores this year. That means pot brownies are now big business. Food products infused with marijuana's active ingredient are available in stores across the state, but marijuana is still considered illegal by the federal government, so the existing food safety system can't ensure that marijuana-infused foods are safe. Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon has more on what it takes to build an entire regulatory structure from scratch.
So we'll just go under. You want to limbo with me?
Christy Lunsford sneaks past a line of about 25 people at the 3D Cannabis Center in Denver and approaches a display case. Lunsford is the marketing director for Dixie Elixirs, a manufacturer of foods infused with THC,
okay,
a chemical in marijuana that gives you a high.
So our edible line has things like handmade, hand-dipped truffles.
And sodas, fudge, Tootsie Roll-like chews, and mints. Other companies churn out baked goods, granola bars, and butter. At one point, there was THC-infused beef jerky on the market.
So it really is a companion plant, whether it's used medicinally or for its lovely intoxicating features. Okay.
Lunsford's company, along with a handful of other edibles manufacturers, is ramping up to fill a new demand. Colorado's had medicinal marijuana for more than a decade, but now sales are open to the general public. That means the standard labels of consume at your own risk and buyer beware don't quite cut it anymore. Like any food company, Dixie Elixirs is worried about getting people sick. But unlike other companies, the FDA wants nothing to do with foods that include marijuana.
We are under a microscope, and even my competitors who are food novices, they really care about providing for the consumer and making sure they're safe.
Yeah, so this is our lab.
In a corporate park on the other side of the city is one of the country's only labs specializing in testing marijuana, CAN Labs. Owner Jennifer Murray got into the game early and is now about to reap the benefits.
The CAN Lab started in a space of about 150 square feet. This is about 500, and we're moving to 2,000.
New state rules set to go into effect this year will require more testing of marijuana products in labs like Murray's. Until this point, tests for foodborne pathogens, dangerous chemicals like butane, and the potency of THC were voluntary, meaning few companies actually did them. Murray says it's important for consumers to know what they're getting into, or else they can end up taking too much all at once.
You can feel like you're dying. Your heart rate speeds up. You sweat. You can throw up. I mean, it's awful. So with edibles, it is very important that they get tested and that you know your dose.
The rulemaking process, which took place last fall, has raised even more questions. Murray's lab isn't certified, and she can't find any credible agency to do it. The State Department of Public Health has been reluctant to take any kind of regulatory role with marijuana. A portion of the department's budget comes from the federal government. That means the lion's share of the enforcement and creation of the industry's rules comes from a small division of the state's Department of Revenue.
Now, I came into this with a very open mind.
Louis Koski is the Division of Marijuana Enforcement's new director.
To a large extent, we're learning a lot as we go along. And, you know, the right thing to do, you know, from a regulatory standpoint is to make sure we can comprehensively regulate all these businesses and ensure the health and welfare of the citizens of Colorado.
Colorado's marijuana experiment has pushed the Department of Revenue into areas it never would have been before, like food safety and lab certification. And because Colorado is one of the first states to regulate recreational marijuana, all eyes are on Koski to see if the regulation actually works.
It's a new agency. If you were just going to start up a new agency and a public policy arena that wasn't this divisive, it'd be pretty challenging. And then you insert some of the complexities that go along with varied ideas on how this should all be carried out, and it certainly adds a little bit more pressure to it.
Colorado has taken innovative steps in ensuring public safety. And in terms of foodborne illness, eventually you might be safer buying an edible marijuana product than produce at the grocery store. They've rolled out a system that tracks all marijuana plants from seed to sale, meaning if a pot brownie caused a salmonella outbreak, you could track it all the way back to the source. That tracking system is just one piece of a much larger regulatory scheme used to keep the recreational marijuana industry in check. And other states curious to see if they can cash in on the green rush will be watching. I'm Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media reports on farm and food issues and is a collaboration of KUNC and other public media stations in the Midwest. You can find out other stories or comment on this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. Stay tuned for the Friday morning music mix with P. Gibby. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.